Books on Tape presents FDR by Gene Edward Smith. Read by Mark Cashman. He lifted himself from his wheelchair to lift this nation from its knees. Mario Cuomo. Preface. Three presidents dominate American history. George Washington, who founded the country, Abraham Lincoln, who preserved it, and Franklin Delano Roosevelt, who rescued it from economic collapse and then led it to victory in the greatest war of all time. Elected for an unprecedented four terms, Roosevelt proved the most gifted American statesman of the 20th century. When he took office in 1933, one-third of the nation was unemployed. Agriculture lay destitute. Factories were idle. Businesses were closing their doors, and the banking system teetered on the brink of collapse. Violence lay just beneath the surface. The Hoover administration had deployed tanks and tear gas to drive a bedraggled remnant of World War I veterans, the bonus marchers, from Washington, but otherwise appeared incapable of responding to the crisis. Roosevelt seized the opportunity. He galvanized the nation with an inaugural address. "The only thing we have to fear is fear itself," that ranks with Lincoln's second inaugural. Declared a banking holiday to restore confidence in the nation's banks, and initiated a flurry of legislative proposals to put the country back on its feet. Under FDR's energetic leadership, the government became an active participant in the economic life of the nation. More important, he restored the country's confidence. Roosevelt revolutionized the art of political campaigning, revitalized the Democratic Party, and created a new national majority that included those previously cast aside. His fireside chats brought the presidency into every living room in America. And what may be more remarkable, he did this while paralyzed from the waist down. For the last 23 years of his life, Franklin Roosevelt could not stand unassisted. The literature on the Roosevelt era is immense. Virtually every major participant has written his or her memoirs. Scholars have filled library shelves with analytic studies. And the nation's most prolific writers have addressed the New Deal, the Second World War, and the outsized personalities who dominated American life in the 1930s and 40s. Biographies of Franklin Roosevelt are only slightly less numerous than those of Washington or Lincoln, and there is little that has not been said somewhere about the president. These works are easily accessible to the student of history, yet are seldom consulted by the general public. In recent years, biographies of lesser figures, Truman, MacArthur, Eisenhower, the numerous Kennedys, have shaped popular perceptions of the period. Rummaging through the life of Eleanor Roosevelt has become a cottage industry. As a result, Roosevelt himself has become a mythic figure, looming indistinctly out of the mist of the past. The riddle for a biographer is to explain how this Hudson River aristocrat, a son of privilege who never depended on a paycheck, became the champion of the common man. The answer most frequently suggested is that the misfortune of polio changed Roosevelt. By conquering adversity, he gained insight into the nature of suffering and found new sources of strength within himself. That is undoubtedly true, but it does not go far enough. FDR's effort to recover from polio took him to Warm Springs, Georgia. Year after year at Warm Springs, he was exposed to the brutal reality of rural poverty. All around him, he saw hard-working people who were ill-housed, ill-clad, and ill-nourished. Roosevelt's patrician instincts rebelled, and he began to formulate the economic ideas that came to fruition in the New Deal. As governor of New York when the Great Depression hit, FDR was the only state chief executive to organize extensive relief efforts. Modern society, acting through its government, he said, owes the definite obligation to prevent the starvation or the dire want of any of its fellow men and women who try to maintain themselves but cannot. Roosevelt was too talented to be confined by the circumstances of his birth. His devotion to his career and his conviction that he was a man of destiny far outweighed any tribal loyalty. A social conservative by instinct and upbringing, he did more to alter the relationship between ordinary citizens and their government than any other American. And he shaped our notion of the modern presidency. In that sense, Roosevelt was a natural. He was not especially gifted in any field except politics. But in politics, he had no equal. Roosevelt knew the Democratic Party better than anyone. It was said he could draw a line on a map from the East Coast to the West Coast and name every county the line intersected. In most counties, he knew the Democratic leader and one or two office holders as well. And he kept close watch on party patronage. His appointments were calculated not only to reward, but to co-opt. As his first Secretary of War, he appointed Utah isolationist George Dern. For Secretary of State, he chose conservative Tennessee Senator Cordell Hull, a sheet anchor to protect the administration from carping redneck legislators. His vice president, hard-drinking John Nance Garner of Texas, former Speaker of the House, solidified Southern support. To dole out federal money at the Reconstruction Finance Corporation, FDR chose conservative Texas banker Jesse Jones. When the Securities and Exchange Commission came into being, he appointed Joseph Kennedy to head it. "It takes a thief to catch a thief," the Washington Post chortled. FDR's administrative style was a legendary mixture of straightforward delegation, flowchart responsibility, Machiavellian cunning, and crafty deception. James McGregor Burns called him a lion and a fox. Francis Perkins, FDR's long-serving Secretary of Labor, said Roosevelt was the most complicated human being I have ever known. He kept major decisions in his own hands, played his cards close to his chest, and enjoyed the consternation of opponents when his maneuvers were revealed. "I'm a juggler," Roosevelt told Treasury Secretary Henry Morgenthau, Jr. "I never let my right hand know what my left hand is doing." Occasionally, he overreached. His wrong-headed 1937 court-packing scheme boomeranged badly, as did his ill-considered intervention in Democratic senatorial primaries in 1938. He made mistakes. Some were catastrophic, such as his 1937 decision to slash federal expenditures, precipitating the Roosevelt recession of 1938 to 1939. Roosevelt expected cabinet officers to run their own shows, but did not hesitate to enter the arena when an issue interested him. He handled the nation's diplomacy largely through Undersecretary of State Sumner Welles, a fellow Gratonian, and often ignored Secretary Hull. The Navy he ran through the Chief of Naval Operations, Admiral William D. Leahy, who had skippered FDR's yacht when Roosevelt was Assistant Secretary of the Navy. When he decided to replace Douglas MacArthur as Army Chief of Staff in 1934, he sent the general on an inspection tour of Hawaii and then announced his successor while MacArthur was en route. Roosevelt relished being president. His buoyant energy and unshakable optimism transmitted itself to everyone he met. After the lusterless Warden G. Harding, the dour Coolidge, and stuffy Herbert Hoover, FDR seemed like a breath of fresh air in the White House. His self-assurance was exactly what the country needed. With the possible exception of Ronald Reagan, who voted for FDR four times, no president has been more serene in the conviction that whatever happened, everything would turn out all right. "Take a method and try it," he once said. "If it fails, admit it and try another. But above all..."
Sample complete. Ready to continue?